Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, Turkish. Hello, Turkish.
Stop doing hello, Turkish. We've got to start the show.
I'll just start them.
A whole new world, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Watford were gubbed. Sheffield United got a great win. And Manchester United made Roy Keane sad.
You came here for a shootout, you're not going to be disappointed. It's the Ramblers. Whee!
Heads up, it's the Ramblers.
You do sound like the guy who actually did it. People thought it was you. It wasn't you, but you sound like him. That's why they thought it was you.
Our show plays games with people's minds because a lot of people are convinced that Peter sings the Going for Gold theme tune.
And yet they've heard me sing on other jingles.
Yeah.
And that is empirically impossible.
Yeah, it would be impossible.
Somebody actually emails in saying, I'm convinced that Pete sings the email jingle. Yeah, I'm involved.
Yeah. Sings
it's
is...
not a professional singer.
Is Sings generous?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much
does,
so.
He does sing
like
it. It's a duet. Yeah, exactly.
Ow!
A bit more of that.
We'll hear about
I feel good.
Heat is on.
We'll hear it a few times later on, I expect, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Lot to get through today.
Yeah, busy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll start with Manchester City's gubbing of Watford.
Is it even a gubbing? I think it's beyond a gubbing, isn't it?
Can a £400 million team be a bogey team for somebody? Because they are very good.
No.
Watford are a bit... I just can't get you out of my head. They're having like instant flashback.
Yeah. Don't go back to her. Don't go back to her, Steve. She'll only break your heart again. Oh, she has.
Easy to forget that Watford had a chance to draw level at 1-1.
Yes, well, it is.
It was a real turning point, wasn't
possibly
it?
Possibly the easiest of things to forget. But it took
Guardiola mentioned it in the post-match press.
or the interview. He went, well, they had a chance or two to equalise at 1-1. Obviously, after that, I think we kicked on. But, yeah.
They had a chance to equalise at around about 45 minutes in, but they would have had to have scored 4 goals before that. So,
and Kike Sanchez Flores, I reckon, probably did that thing all week where he really heavily lent on the idea that they need to get over the FA Cup final psychologically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he did that thing where he's saying, don't think about a naked man.
Right,
don't think about a naked woman. And instantly you think about it.
Yeah.
And he's what he's done is he's implanted a gubbing into their heads the whole week.
Yeah.
And they've just essentially you know, they've just essentially lived out that visualisation.
They've pictured themselves naked, haven't they?
Yeah.
Is what's happened.
Yeah. Well, it should be them.
Yeah.
You know, Wayne Rooney used to apparently ask the kit man to put his kit out early in the morning before a game, and he would go down into the dressing room on his own and look at the kit so he could visualise what he'd be wearing and what he would do, and that would be part of his psychological kind of preparation. I wonder if Kike Sanchez Flores has made them visualise a absolute battering.
Yeah. Do you think he made them watch the FA Cup final again and go, right, this is what you did wrong, this is what's going on, and they've thought,
well, it can't be worse.
Yeah,
it is. It is. Does it make you sad?
Yes, it does. That's exactly what I was going to
say. Does it make you sad for the Premier League overall?
You can't be too sanctimonious, because we didn't say that when, like, you know, when Spurs beat Wigan 9-1, for example.
But I think that's different, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the fact that Wigan scored.
But it's different, Jim. It's different if you think that that was just a total outlier, a total anomaly.
Yes.
But if you think that Marcus, perhaps, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Marcus, but you think that this is a trend that's happening more and more, then it could make you sad about the league, right?
Yes, that.
Well, is that what you meant?
That's more concise.
Okay, right.
So thank you very much for that.
I'm glad they didn't equal that record. It's Spurs and Man United hold it jointly, don't they?
No, Manchester United. 9-1?
Was it 9-1 or 9-0 when they beat
Ipswich? It was 9-0.
Right, okay.
So,
right.
Of course, Spurs scored the extra goal, but it was an 8-goal margin. So.
But I like that City haven't broken that, purely because you don't want it to be a sort of kind of a moneyed team that holds all of the records. You know,
I know what
you
mean.
If every Premier League record was held by modern Man City,
I mean, they've got most of the important ones.
Well, quite exactly, yeah. So at least there's a few remaining.
Chris Kirkland, I interviewed him for Ramble Meets,
yeah, that's right.
And he was in goal when Spurs beat Wigan by that margin.
Was he?
Well, and he argued, said, to be honest, like, it could have been a lot worse.
Well,
I
was at Stamford Bridge when Chelsea beat Aston Villa 8-0, and I think it was Brad Guzan in goal. He genuinely had a good game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he made a number of saves.
Well, Ben Foster as well said it could have been 12, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he's right. There were a lot of good chances. And so many of City's goals seem to come in the 6-yard box. They just pinned them in so deeply that it was proper, like, stop hitting yourself, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would also argue that if you are 5-0 down after 18 minutes, the goalkeeper might be at fault here and there.
Yeah.
But if they are having that level and volume of chances that early in the game, it's not just the keeper's fault.
What do you think of that old sort of, you know, sort of perceived wisdom or whatever, with wisdom, but the feeling in football where once you've kind of gone 5-0 up or something, you know, there's no need to score many goals. I remember when Manchester United beat Arsenal, was it 8-2?
It was.
Even Ferguson seemed slightly embarrassed after, he said, there's no need he said something to the effect of, there's no need to do that to Arsenal, you know, once you go or something like that. And but on the other hand, how tight was it last season? Goal difference might come into it.
Well, quite, yeah. I think that's something that's absolutely going to be taken into account as well. And City, I mean, they were trying to score as many as possible, weren't they? But that is a
you can't
sign
blame
of a team
them.
That actually love playing the game and love the sort of attacking style that they've got. So, I mean, I don't think you really hold it against them.
I think it just depends on how you conduct yourself. I think you have a responsibility to play as well as you can.
Or entertain your fans.
Yeah, and win as well as you can. But you can conduct yourself in a manner which doesn't show yourself to be disrespectful to the opposition.
Yes.
Man City are far better than Watford. Everyone knows that. You know when Martin Keown jumped in Ruud van Nistelrooy's face when he missed that penalty.
Jim, do you remember that?
You could celebrate goals by going up to the goalkeeper and do that. You might get a booking or whatever, but you could do that. Clearly, the way to do it is to be as efficient as you can and play as well as you can. And as you said, Marcus, to entertain your fans, you pay hard-earned money to go and watch. But you don't have to gloat.
Did anyone really criticise it?
I don't think so. Marcus, I think you just bring it up as like a conversational point.
Yeah.
It has been brought up. Most recently, it was
the
brought
US women's
up.
Team.
That's right.
Correct, against Thailand, yeah. But then that wasn't these are two teams in the same division type thing.
That's Watford, World Cup.
It's a World Cup.
Yeah, you could easily say that Watford should be absolutely ashamed of themselves for not applying themselves. But then it's easy for us to say, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the goalkeeper.
Ben Foster.
Ben Foster.
Has he been so thoroughly embarrassed?
Yeah. Sorry, I was about to say Ben Foster and doubt myself.
You have been
the image of him is disappearing in your mind.
Forgive me that. When he was talking about it in the interview after the game, and he sort of did chuckle at one point. Now, I don't want to sort of start having a go. I suppose it's kind of laugh or cry.
Didn't get booked, did he?
He
didn't take that.
Well, a few people tweeted me about that. I think they got two bookings.
They did. Firmino and Delafeu got booked.
I mean, I suppose the only thing I would say is that 5-0 down after 18 minutes. But
I think the penalty, I think in those situations, you're so far away from the goal, it's not even a penalty for me.
Yeah. I know.
It's not a goal scoring opportunity.
I just, for what? I don't know. I mean, it's fair to say that the new manager bounce didn't last very long, isn't it?
No.
And also, some of the literature around some of the writing around Flores' appointment is that, oh yeah, he's well known to be able to set up a team defensively.
Yeah.
But this is a Man City team that is possibly, you know, certainly in the conversation as being among the best in Europe, and it's tough.
And there's also, I think there is a psychological hangover from the FA Cup final. Like, I think even when they gave away the penalty, I think it was perhaps Decore, you could see on his face there was a sense of, not quite panic, but of almost a fear. Like, it's like, oh God, is this going to happen again? Yeah. And we see this thing in football so often, that sense that you know the inevitable is coming, and it seems to take over the narrative of what's happening on the pitch, and it just very much looked like that was the case.
Well, Ben Foster said that the walls came up and he just looked at his defenders and they just looked, they didn't look shocked or confused, they just looked, oh God, that's ashen faced.
Get through it.
Yeah, I mean, for me though, you know, they're obviously a number of goals down at half time. You have to show a bit more in the second half. Like, you have to do something. And they just didn't. And I'll be honest with you, when I talk about the bookings and all that kind of stuff, I'm not saying go out and hurt someone, obviously. But if someone goes past you, like, put in a challenge, do something to try and galvanise your team. Because if you're 5-0 down or whatever it was, 6-0 at half time, and you go into the second half, of course the game's gone, for crying out loud. Mm. But if you lose, just, you don't concede, or maybe even you nick one or something like that, you can take a positive. But the fact is, it was the same from start to finish. That is so demoralising and so hard to pick yourself up from the next week. The fans are thinking, what on earth? And now Watford, you're thinking, are they in a relegation scrap? You know, they haven't been a relegation-type team for a little while now, relatively speaking. So,
Do you think
it's such a depressing situation for Watford, really?
Do you think rehiring an old manager sort of breaks this cycle of their strange recruitment policy actually working? It's like the magic is gone.
Yeah,
you wonder whether they took a lot of backlash from City losing last week.
Well, I think
that's refocused their minds. Definitely. That's repurposed them. Mm-hmm. Guardiola then has an excuse to say, look, this is not good enough.
Yes,
because it can become pretty repetitive and monotonous, I expect, when you just win all the time. Yeah. I know they were pegged back by Spurs. They dominated them in that game, I suppose.
That was just one of those ones.
Yeah, but now they've kind of, it's almost a bit like they're a wounded tiger and they're lashing out.
And that is the sign of a good team, isn't it? If they have a bad result, then someone a little way down the line is getting a battering. And I think you're absolutely right. That's a fact.
I think it's an important message that Manchester City put out there. I mean, Liverpool have started the season so well, winning all their games. Manchester City, when Norwich beat them, and a slightly depleted Norwich side, newly promoted, the last thing Guardiola wants is for his team to become, like we've said with say Arsenal or perhaps Spurs now, is when a bigger side goes, you think, oh, hang on a minute, we can get something here.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to be turning, Guardiola wants teams to thinking, oh, bloody hell, we've got Man City. Let's hope we don't lose by that much. Or let's hope we can just nick something or whatever. That's what you want. And so to lose against Norwich like they did, it sends shockwaves through the league and other smaller teams go, hang on a minute. They can be got at, and especially the way Liverpool have started. So to basically go, right, that is a complete freak of nature. Poof, there we go. Have a bit of that rest of the league. And nobody, as if they did want to go to the Etihad the last.
I feel bad continually talking about it for Watford fans.
Shall we move on?
I think
it's a good idea.
Two wounded animals doing two very different things.
They've had a terrible start of the season. We interviewed Will Hughes, lovely man.
I just
don't want to feel like I'm dancing all over the ruins of their start for the season.
No, don't want to stir up a hornet's nest, etc.
No, exactly, Marcus. Yeah.
All right then, let's talk about Leicester City. It was a great game, full of spice and incident.
Mm.
Lovely win for Brendy Rodgers, of course. Luke, you talked about it as being a lunchtime treat on the previous show last week. Certainly was, wasn't it?
It was, and how do I start talking about this without getting into VAR?
VAR.
Why are we not allowed to talk about VAR? Every single person in the media sort of said, we're not talking about VAR, it's here and you can't help it. But it's like, it is ruining a lot of football, isn't it?
It's boring, isn't it?
It's a balance, I think, between addressing the clearly what is one of the biggest issues of our time in football, but also not boring the shit out of our listeners.
Yeah.
But some would argue we've been doing that for years anyway. Mm. So I think there's some interesting points about Spurs here. I think that if you take into account that they're in a bit of a funny situation at the moment, there's some interesting reasons for it, I think, anyway. Mm-hmm. One is that this game, they didn't get, I don't think they got back from Greece till quite late Thursday morning.
Yeah.
I was surprised
that they were scheduled to play.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a shame. They've got players in the last year of their contract, who some of whom have said, you know, publicly they'd like to move on, and that hasn't happened. And I think that's creating a bit of a heady brew, really. And the amount of times they've been pegged back already this season is crazy. Like, I mean, it happened against Olympiacos, happened against Arsenal, it's happened now against Leicester, and we're only in September. It's a big challenge for Pochettino to bring them up and sort of react to that to it. I thought Ndombele was so bad against Olympiacos. And yet, because of the situation they find themselves in with injuries, with tiredness, I mean, Ali wasn't even in the squad. Hugo Lloris, of course, was absent because his wife gave birth, so he wasn't there, so the first choice keeper wasn't there. There are mitigating circumstances.
Yeah.
And I thought Ndombele sort of applied himself fairly well in parts against Leicester. Obviously, he got subbed off, but he was so bad midweek, but they don't really have any option other than to play him. Mm-hmm. So you can sort of see... It sort of lays bare the job that overall Pochettino has done in a really good way. But Leicester, when they fancy it and when they're at it, they're good. Mm. And this VAR thing, to me, I'll try and do it as succinctly as I can. Everyone says it's offside or it isn't. That's it. You know, Graham Souness said at the weekend, you can't be a little bit pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not, right? Probably quite a weird way of putting it, but
he's used to work with Richard Keys.
I think we all understand the point. But something that's not been discussed, is the build-up cutoff.
Mm.
When do you cut it off? Because the build-up for the disallowed goal at the Chelsea game and disallowed goal in this game, I think it was the Aurier goal, the cutoff is arbitrary based on what the guy in Stockley Park thinks.
Yes.
And that means it isn't consistent. So the one thing we've been told we're going to get, we're not getting, they have to come up with a consistent way of saying when the phase of play starts.
Yeah.
And it's different every goal, sure, because every goal is different.
Well, I was going to say this, actually, the Chelsea thing, but I'll say it now. In that... which the Azpilicueta goal was it at Chelsea?
It was
chalked
off,
or the non-goal, of course.
Yeah,
I think a Liverpool defender actually cuts in and knocks the ball, so it almost like breaks up the move. Now, if you're talking about phases of play from a free kick coming in, but actually the ball's played, but then the defender heads it back in, it almost like they talk about phases of play. Do you remember all that?
Yeah.
They sort of break it up. Well, there the offside decision was given before that phase of play, if you see what I mean, started.
Is it not a situation where they should just, you know, a 30 second cut off and that's just the way it is? But also, I think
seconds is fucking mad. That's mad.
Well, no, but okay, so say if you had 5-10 seconds, whatever, some arbitrary number, that would still cause problems.
Well, it's interesting because this one, the Serge Aurier goal, is that I think this is the tightest one we've seen.
I mean, even
looking at it doesn't look conclusive. But we're talking about like atoms rather than millimetres.
So the system was brought in to to back up referees but not undermine their decisions. A referee couldn't make those decisions, or a linesman couldn't make that decision, because it's too fast, and like Suna says, all right, fair play, you're either off or you're done. But the technology is not fit for purpose. There must be a system that provides a decision immediately.
Yeah.
Or if not
a system that can do that, compromises around it, like the benefit of the doubt goes with the attacker, or some chase.
But again,
the offside
they would
say there's no doubt.
You think?
Well, because there is no doubt in their mind.
In that system,
there's no doubt.
Yeah, I suppose.
But the cutoff. I mean, I know you just said 30 seconds is just like a random time, so I'm not holding it against you. But to put it in perspective, I think that Serge Aurier one was 9 seconds.
All right, well, 10 seconds.
But that felt like miles before. It was the through ball before about five other passes.
Yeah, but I'm just throwing numbers there, but there needs to be some kind of...
But what system. They did a few years ago, Pete, more than a few years ago now, you guys obviously know this, is they changed it so if you're not interfering with play, you're not offside. So in some of these incidents, there are players standing offside, but they're not ruled to be offside because they're not interfering with play. Mm. Maybe they have to go down a road where they say,
anyone offside?
Well, that's what it used to be back in the day.
Yeah, either that or they say it's only for the assist.
Yeah. Right.
But then that makes the whole game completely different.
Say, I feel like...
we could always just go back to what we had before.
People used to
92% of decisions were correct before. 97% of offside.
No, it's not enough.
Yeah, people not used enough. To say that it would even itself out over a season. So maybe in this instance, if a team has had a goal ruled out for offside, you just get a free one.
Oh, yeah,
that like you can drop at any point in the season. If people look back and go, actually, you know what, maybe that is a little bit harsh.
Play your free hit.
You just get a sort of ace card.
It's all just a big shame.
What about Harry Kane's goal?
That's amazing. It looked like one of those FIFA bugs. When you see it in slow motion, it's like, why is he walking like that? What a goal. That's one of my favourite goals of the season, because it's so weird.
Yeah,
I know very different. Yeah.
The presence of mind to still want to shoot, despite knowing in the back of his mind he could have got a pen.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably legitimately.
Knife. Yeah.
I enjoyed James Maddison's goal more, though.
Beauty.
Yeah. I'm a bit more of a traditionalist, perhaps.
They keep doing a bit better with that one.
It was a decent hit.
It's a decent hit.
The general rule, I think, with those kind of questions is what part of the net does the ball hit?
Right, okay.
It looked side of the, quite
and,
far
and the way
corner.
It sort of went round the defender was. Yeah.
I think Gazzaniga's a good keeper, by the way, but I think that was a beauty of a goal, well worth a win. But
yeah, but after that goal was chalked off for Spurs, suddenly Leicester thought, hang on a minute here. And that's the thing with these VAR decisions. And they came roaring back. Now, would the game have been killed off at 2-0? Possibly, we'll never know.
With Pochettino, just going back to Pochettino and Spurs, he frees out players for poor performances, and he did midweek coming at this game. But the problem is with the contract structure at Spurs, you do sort of think that the player power is a little like the dial's turned up a little bit at Spurs, so they do have a little bit more say about what they're going to move on to and stuff because their wages aren't competitive and it's all on a bonus structure and stuff like that. So you do worry that Poch, if he loses the dressing room, he might just be disinterested by the whole project and go, oh, these guys I'm dealing with are absolute tools.
There's rumours, isn't it? But you compare him to Brendan Rodgers, who's having a bloody lovely time. He can't believe he's luck at this.
I feel like maybe because Spurs have effectively moved up a level in terms of their status in the last three or four seasons. And I wonder if that's began to stagnate a little bit.
Maybe. You know,
if people have sussed them out a little bit and they themselves are thinking, well, we're very unlikely to win the league. We're kind of used to getting into the Champions League. Maybe they're not as motivated as they've been in the past because they've always had that sort of surprise package feel. And it feels like this season that's dropped off.
Where's Eric Dyer in all this? Like, why is
he's
he
warming the bench?
He can't stay fit.
But what you just said there, Jim, is that sometimes that can happen with a club who, let's be honest, overachieved by getting to a Champions League final. And you think, is that as good as it gets? Now, if they win the final, there's something to defend, and you go, hang on a minute, we've stepped up a level kind of thing. You lose the final to...
In quite tepid circumstances as well.
It was a sort of a funny evening, wasn't it? You lose the final and there is an element of... It can't get any better than that, can it?
I think you've also got to take into account, by the way, guys, that Mauricio Pochettino is currently the fifth longest-serving manager in England.
Yeah.
He's been there a long time.
I think Jim was hinting at that.
It was too early to say this. Now... But it wouldn't be, he won't be the first manager to have managed a club for over 5 years and go, right, that's me, because he's revolutionised the club. He's seen them through a very interesting period. As you alluded to, Marcus, he's set them up in a way that now means that they are a team who are feared and who are one of the very best teams in the country. They've gone into a new stadium, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it would be the most controversial thing ever if he said, right, I'm off for a new challenge now.
No.
Only Sean Dyche, Eddie Howe, Gareth Ainsworth at Wickham and Jim Bentley at Morecambe have served longer than him. And three of those haven't served that much longer.
Well, it shocked the Celtic fans when Brendan Rodgers left. But their loss is Leicester's gain. So we're going to talk about Leicester now, gentlemen, because... The noises that are coming out from the club of Madison as well, they really fancy it this season. The way they're talking and the way Rodgers will be setting them up, they'll be wanting to grab, say, fourth spot, something like that, will they not? And at the moment, yeah, they've had a couple of, you'd say, unlucky results. They were unlucky to lose against Manchester United. And when they come away, we'll talk about Man United in a bit, but when they come away from that game, they felt like, bloody hell, we're better than them. Mm. And there's a feeling around that club that we haven't really seen since that season with Ranieri, I would argue.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't think it's probably going to end in quite the same fashion as that one.
No, but I said fourth spot, perhaps.
But I think you're right, because, I mean, you know, the idea of a top six is a bit of a fairly new one and a strange one, isn't it? And obviously, six doesn't go into four. and I think Arsenal and Man United certainly look vulnerable within that. Chelsea as well. So, I mean...
And Wolves Leicester are not playing
absolutely.
Everton?
Leicester will absolutely be looking at getting into that hen house and murdering everything.
I think based on the
those
first...
foxes.
Based on the first six games of the season, they've got to be aiming for third.
Third.
Well, who else is better than them? Who else is?
They're aiming for a top four finish.
I'm not doubting it. I'm reinforcing it. I like it. A big opinion.
I think they'll fall away a bit, but they will certainly be looking at being in the conversation.
They don't have the squad, perhaps, that other sides have.
Yeah, but that said, I think Brendan Rodgers is enjoying a slightly more talented squad than he had in his last post. So there is that.
Yeah,
I don't think Brendan Rodgers deserves all the plaudits that he's getting. Like these, you know,
really
when it comes to. Well, I think they'll fall away, like Jim says.
Well, but they haven't though. They've started the season very well. Rodgers has got to take.
But I'm looking into the future. It's only just begun. Marcus.
Ah, I forget that you can do that.
Yeah.
And if you'd apply that for our four to score, that would be great. and give me some of that as well. I loved when Rodgers smiling the double point to James Maddison when he scored, because he's talked up Maddison so much.
But this is the thing, isn't it? This is why Brendan Rodgers gets a lot of plaudits. Because he he gives them to himself quite often, doesn't he?
No, he's pointing at Maddison there.
Yeah, but he's going, look, I told you you were great. That's a win for me.
No, I don't know, Jim. I think you've been a bit
the only
harsh
person who likes Maddison more than Rodgers is Maddison. Let's make that very clear.
Well, the comments he made about Maddison going into the weekend were very strange. He was asked about whether Maddison could leave. Uh-huh. And Rodgers said in the lead up to the game, oh, we're not thinking about that, but if the offer came in that the club was thought was acceptable, then we would discuss it. Which I thought was a very strange thing to say.
He's a little bit too honest,
I think,
with some of his comments, because you can understand when they sold Maguire, and I think Rodgers said, look, it's a huge amount of money. It's Manchester United, you know, you sort of can't really blame him. But of course they had Soyuncu, I think it's pronounced, the Turkish centre-half, who's come through. And he's been on Leicester's books for a little bit now.
He's been great.
And he's been brilliant. And so Rodgers will be aware that that player can step in there, and a huge amount of money for Maguire. I get that. But you're right, Luke, to say that about Maddison's quite strange. But Maddison himself, and Southgate was in the crowd, of course. And the way Maddison's playing, if he continues his development, I mean, will Southgate for England?
Is there any space for him?
Well, will he have to?
Barclay
but will he accommodate him? Will he try and put him in one of those two more sort of, as often described, sort of shuttler positions? Or will he play a two behind Maddison in front?
I don't think Southgate would be there if he wasn't considering that. You know, we've seen from the way he approaches management that he is open to doing different things and to thinking in a quite dynamic way. So I'm surprised we haven't seen it yet, but I think it just seems a matter of time before we see him in that role.
Do you not
for
think
England.
Southgate likes those kind of like solid individuals? He doesn't like any one player thinking he's the bee's knees and stuff. And Maddison is that player who excels because he's got a really high opinion of himself. And
there's been talk that he's been tricky in the past.
Well, Maddison.
Yeah.
But Southgate knows him. Southgate's worked with him before.
But the way you answer that question, Mark, is you look at the players that are in the current squad who are playing a similar position to him or a different, a similar type of attacking position and wonder whether they're in better form than him. And it's quite hard to make an argument that...
Say that any of them are.
With the exception of Sterling, I mean, he's not going to lose his place realistically. No. There should be a place for him at least in the squad because... I don't think he was in the most recent squad. Was he Jesse Lingard? I think he's injured, isn't he? Or he was injured at the time.
Well, he came on against West Ham, of course.
That's right. I mean, you can't argue that Jesse Lingard's a better player than James Maddison. I know they're slightly different players, but they play in attacking roles for a national side, and they are therefore competing against each other depending on the system. Yeah. You couldn't make an argument that Lingard's better than Maddison.
No. But if he's in that squad, then he'll be doing it for the supporters, okay.
Okay.
Let's move on to Everton, Sheffield United. Another great result for the Blades on the road. It's their first away win this season. Intriguing because a lot of people saying Sheffield United were great, blah, 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 blah. It was a great result, no doubt about that. But Chris Wilder said he was happy with the performance in the previous match when they lost, and he felt that it was actually their poorest performance of the season. Now, I don't know whether there's an element of mind games going on there.
It feels that way, doesn't it? Because, I mean, you know, they dug in a lot, and they didn't they only have one shot on target? Despite winning 2-0, or some weird.
Well, yeah, because the first goal was an own goal.
Yeah. So I kind of like that. But I mean, surely you should praise the defensive display.
Well, I think you have to. I mean, it'd be nice to see Phil Jagielka come on, of course.
And get that reception as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say a lot has been made of how Marco Silva's Everton haven't once come from behind to win, which is a real problem, isn't it? He's been there long enough that you would expect that to have happened at one point. And I think he's under a bit of pressure now.
Oh, he is.
Like, they should not be losing games like this. I mean, all the talk from coming out of Everton at the start of the season was about a push for the top six, or, you know, at least certainly being the best of the rest, and they look just so far off that.
Well, the goodwill's there, isn't it? I think everybody wants Everton to kind of kick on a little bit, but they're just not performing at all. What's that, three losses?
Three
already?
Losses in four, yeah. I mean, if you look at the two sides that faced off at Goodison, every Everton player at some point, and some are still currently, they're international players. Mm. They all play and have played for their country, but against Sheffield United, you know, I understand they've been sort of, you know, try to kind of blast their way through and so on, but they've lost 2-0 to a newly promoted side, and it's not the first time they've lost to a newly promoted side this season. They were poor against Bournemouth. They haven't faced a top six side yet. It doesn't look good for them. It really doesn't.
They have, I mean, a couple of things to put up on the Sheffield United thing. Pep Guardiola always says that as well. He says in press conferences quite a lot, oh, you guys always focus on the result, whereas I always look for the performance. I always look for I know the results can change, it can vary on day to day, but what I'm looking for is consistency of performance in my team.
Yeah.
And if And I thought, I guess what Chris Wilder says there is, look, if we go and we get a 2-0 win away from home, that's brilliant, but we don't play very well. Mm. That's probably a better indicator of where we are as a group. It's quite a high-minded way of looking at football, I think.
I think Wilder said it in a less pompous way, though.
Probably, yeah. Well, than me or Pep.
Both. I'll let the listener decide.
But on the Everton thing, I think there's two main points from where I'm from the outside looking in, from where I'm sitting. One is that I don't think he knows what his best team is. He doesn't know what his best midfield is. There was a massive cry for on the radio show I did last week. People were, Everton fans were texting and tweeting and saying, we want Tom Davis to play midfield with Delph. He played with Schneiderlin. Mm-hmm. The week before he played with Schneiderlin, he's played with Gomez and Delph. He's played with Gomez and Schneiderlin, I think, maybe going back a few weeks against, maybe when they got beaten by Aston Villa away from home.
Possibly.
So he doesn't know what that is. Secondly, Everton fans are some of the most demanding in the country. I think we understand that. Particularly at home, they want to see their team win and they want to see their team play well. I kind of wonder if Marco Silva is the guy who's going to deliver them that football. And I think they're also a team, as you rightly pointed out, they're full of international players.
Yeah.
But they're far lower than the sum of their parts.
Well, that's the worry for me. And
I think it's a sign of a bad situation.
But isn't that why Everton, because that gets levelled at a lot of teams, like, you know, the supporters are very demanding and stuff. But like, if you've got those players, why aren't you playing some decent football?
Yeah, yeah.
Why aren't you putting in performances?
He's not getting a tune.
Every time, like, Moise Kean would seem to be the only player at times that was like into, you know, breaking a team down. But every time he got the ball, Sheffield United players were just on him. Their commitment to the cause.
Absolutely.
And
it was John Egan epitomised. Epitomised that. But you're right, Pete. That's the difference with Sheffield United.
Just way more full blooded, more into the match.
Even with their apparent poor performance, they know the jobs.
Yeah,
they've got the structure.
They show some bloody enthusiasm.
Exactly.
At home, though, Everton should have enough for that. I don't think it's unreasonable of Everton fans to expect better than they're seeing at the moment.
No, absolutely right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a break and then talk about more Premier League.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to the Ramble on Football Ramble Daily, everybody.
Yeah, I bet way for to score update. Jim Campbell, you started off like a house on fire, my friend, with your no goal scorer pick. That's particularly sassy, that.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
came to fruition, didn't it?
unfortunately, Yarmolenko put paid to our shout. I think Marcus might have gone for Sebastian Allaire. Was it you?
I went for Sadio Mane in the Liverpool
game. Oh, maybe it was Pete then.
Petey went for Marcus Rashford.
Did he? That's probably why then.
Who came off injured.
Apparently, only 0.08% of customers at Betway managed to combine Jim's no goal scorer pick with the Yarmolenko shout heading into the late kickoffs. But Alexander-Arnold and John McGeehan wiped everyone out. £100,000 rollover for next week. So tune in on Friday for our next Betway 4 to score tips.
When this 4 to score business came about, I thought, that's nice, that is. Yeah, I can see. It's quite tricky.
So hard.
Yeah.
But it's free, so what are you going to do?
No, of course.
it's free to play. And what you can also do, if you want, is you can combine it with having a bet on it yourself. You can just add it to your bet slip and bet on it as well to win some more money if you're that confident in your picks. But we'll be doing some more on Friday. Betway.com/4to-score. Free to play. Pick the first goal scorers in the 4 selected games for a chance to win £100,000. Can't be bad.
No, it can't be.
Oh, and I also should say we are starting our tour.
We are.
On Thursday.
We're in Hackney.
There are a handful of tickets left for our Hackney Empire show on Thursday, right at the very back. You don't want to miss it. It's the first show of the tour.
Absolutely.
After that, we're at Alexandra Palace on Saturday the 28th, and then we're heading out across the country. We've got our final rehearsal and preparation on Wednesday, which we're looking forward to. Then we're hitting the stage. We're treading the boards.
Oh, yeah.
Be there. Oh, don't miss it. RambleLive.com to get tickets. If you're listening to this in the US, we're coming to the US on the 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th of
Canada as well.
November. And Canada, of course. Toronto on the 7th, Chicago on the 8th and New York City on the 5th and the 6th. The place to get tickets for that is exactly the same place, RambleLive.com. Click on the venue you want to come to and we'll see you there.
This Saturday night, live with the Football Ramble. We're in
Ali
London.
Pally.
Can you think of anything more marvellous than that, Jim?
Rocking out in Wood Green. There's a great kebab shop next to Wood Green Station.
There you go. Free kebab for every purchase. No, that's not true. That's not true.
Yeah.
That's on
just
Pete.
Just asking the kebab shop.
We'll get Pete to pay for it and not claim it back. Present your live ticket to the kebab man. And
he's looking at it, what are you talking about?
Take your chances.
Have a go. All right, let's take our chances now. It's emails with Pete D.
This may have cost me in the region of £200, but I'll be damned if it isn't the greatest email jingle known to man. If you'd like to get in touch and get your email read out, just email show at footballrambledaily.com to get Pete reading it out. Well done.
That's my favourite song.
What a gig. Play it again.
A little bit indulgent.
Pete, you got more value for that. Something we didn't mention last week. That's a far longer jingle for the same price. Yeah.
Exactly.
Please, no one complain, because the jingle will only get longer.
I may have also tied in a little bit of audio for the live show. So if you're looking for an exclusive bit of live show content, that's coming at you with ramblelive.com.
Pete,
it really sounds like you.
It's weird that.
I also gave an interview around the live tour when someone said about, you know, what makes a good podcast or whatever, and I said, "Oh, I don't like it when podcasts are over an hour long. It feels too self indulgent." Next week, this lot started.
I'm just saying, either going for Glold full, version,
one or the other.
It has changed quite a bit. It sounded. We described it as Bon Jordi off air. it's growing into more of a
stadium rock kind of. Yeah, big
I think
stuff,
it's gone. It's got to that phase now where Motley Crue started doing Home Sweet Home and all that kind of like cheesy stadium stuff, or even more cheesier than they were anyway.
Light is in the air. Light is in the air, people. Jeff Dickinson, gents, I recently learned that Madagascar is actually huge, the size of France. My high schooler tells me the common misconception is that it has something to do with map projections. The only really good map is a globe, said his high school teacher. Thank you very much for Jeff. Jeff, and hoping to make it to the live show in Chicago. We'll see you there, Jeffles.
Don't hope to make it. Just do it.
Kyle, looking forward to the show in Toronto. My buddies that like podcasts will not come because they don't like soccer. And my football buddies will not come because they don't like podcasts. Asked my girlfriend if she'd indulge me, and her entire response was definitely not. So I'll be there on my lonesome. We're beginning a campaign for the loners among you to come to ramblelive.com. You'll have a lovely time. Well, the drinks after and everything.
Shout out Adam Eastwood, who's booked his flight from Denver to Chicago. To come see us. That's a 2.5 hour flight.
Oh, yeah.
We might have a little thing in the bar afterwards in our US and Canada shows, seeing who's come the furthest. Perhaps we'll buy them a drink in return. But 2.5 hour flight from Denver to Chicago, Adam Eastwood, if you can beat that, either here or in the US and Canada, let us know.
Let's bring them a kebab.
Yeah.
We'll get them a kebab on Saturday we'll
take it with us.
Definitely.
Tickle it.
Alex says, enjoying the new jingle. That's £200 well spent. I only wish there was a way I could donate in a monthly subscription format to fund more jingles and get added perks that will let me engage more with the show. I think you'll find that's patreon.com/footballrambledaily. So
yes,
hello to Zena as well. Z, that's the nickname. Glad to hear there's a Lonely Ramble Live Club, which I'm enjoying that title. The Colney Ramble Live Club. Mm-hmm. I'll be riding solo at the Ali Pally Show this coming Saturday. I only started following football properly last year, and I'm one of the few people I know who do. I now frequently postpone seeing friends if it means I can catch a game down the pub. Instead, I may have a problem.
the Ramble Live Lonely Hearts Club to do yet another bit of admin is for people who want to come to live shows but don't have anyone to come with. Make yourself known on Twitter or Insta or any of our social medias. We'll hook you up with other Ramble fans and you can have a bloody lovely time together. If all of that fails, just grab one of us after the show. We'll talk to you. We don't mind.
Not during the show, though.
Please not.
That would be annoying. Yeah.
Kent says, with all the talk of attack-minded football and goals galore in both domestic and international football, is it the perfect time for Keggy to return to top-level management with his "we'll score more than you" football? The man was clearly ahead of his time.
That's what Frank Lampard's doing.
Well, he says, if Keegan is not to return, I'll just have to settle to Bielsa's Leeds getting promoted and ripping Frank's shoddy Chelsea defence apart instead. Hello to Casper Pluis. Hello, Casper, from the Netherlands. Last show you mentioned the Felix Magath cheese story, which reminded me of a similar situation in the Dutch Eredivisie. Vitesse, managed by famous, or rather infamous, former Hull City manager Slutsky, the big slut.
Say Phil Brown.
Had their striker.
Phil Brown, the big slut.
The big slut. Big bike slut.
Someone did tweeted, have you seen that, Twitter account? Politicians with footballers' haircuts.
Yes.
Someone did Henry VIII with Phil Brown's hair and Mike piece.
Incredible.
Very good.
What did it look like? Steven Seagal, I thought.
Yeah, it did.
Anyway, Vitesse had their striker and captain Brian Linssen out with an ankle injury, and it looked like he was going to be able to play in the next match in the Dutch Cup. In stepped the father of a legendary Manchester United player, Alexander Butner. He told Linssen the only way to get rid of his injury was to spread mustard all over his injured ankle. After laughing off the suggestion at first, he decided to give it a go anyway. He played the entire 90 minutes. His team took the big slut to the next round of the cup.
Yeah, I mean,
Casper from the Netherlands.
Alexander Butner. To understand the son, you must first look at the father.
Yeah,
he's wearing mustard on everything.
Yeah, it's nice and finally, slut. For now, Alvin says while watching the Newcastle United versus Brighton game, couldn't help but notice the clash of the eggs in midfield. Jonge and Aaron Moy as well. It got me thinking: were there any other noticeable clashes of eggs in recent football? I'm thinking Zidane against Yapstan at Juve versus Man United in the Champions League semi-final.
Oh, good one.
Iron Robin against Cambiaso at Bayern and Inter Milan, respectively, in the 2011 Champions League semi-final. And who could forget the two eggs in Everton battling alongside each other, Carsley and Gravesen.
Yeah,
I think I enjoyed the... there's a particularly good picture of Aaron Moy and Jonjo Shelvey.
They're like mirroring each other.
Yeah, they've both got their arms out like they're a pair of vampires. But it actually reflects the score as well.
Yeah.
Yes, Goose it eggs. Was goalless, yeah.
Sorry to be a stick in the mud, but I'm not sure if Robin had his head shaved in 2011, Marcus.
Oh, good. Look, yeah, I'm not sure.
Do you want to take on Alvin?
Alvin. Alvin. We'll talk about this later.
He might have done, actually. He might have done.
Might have done.
I trust him because his Gmail pictures him at a shrine in Japan.
Oh, all right. One of your lots, EP.
One of my lots. Yeah. If you want to get to the show, it's at shortfootballrambledaily.com.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you, listeners.
Well done.
Liverpool, they kept up their 100% record this season with their 15th straight win in the league, beating Chelsea 2-1 at the Bridge. They're unbeaten in 23, Liverpool, which is their longest unbeaten run since 1990. They're impressive. Although Liverpool, rather Chelsea, stage a bit of a comeback. But I'd like to talk about that Trent Alexander-Arnold goal. Beauty.
Lovely one.
He can hit them.
He can.
It was in before it almost left his foot.
And he side-footed it as well. It reminded me of, Marcus, the only other player I've seen
incredible
that
goal.
Hits the ball like that with the side of his foot was Drogba.
Drogba did that. David Luiz, that free kick for Brazil.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
He was more laces, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's quite a lot of players thinking about it.
Actually, N'Golo Kante's wasn't dissimilar from that in the same
That was
game.
A scoop.
Oh, it was a scoop. N'Golo Kante's. It was such a delightful finish.
Marcus, it was a bustle and a scoop.
Yeah, it was a bit, yeah. I don't know if it was a scoop.
It's a bustle and a power scoop.
A bustle and scoop sounds like a sort of mid-noughties like platform game on a like PS2.
No, like an R&B sort of.
It sounds like a place you can get a very competitive brunch in like a suburban town.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Midnight is place to listen to. Get out, Jim.
I said mid-noughties.
He did say mid-noughties.
Oh, you said mid-noughties. Sorry, apologies. Yeah. I apologise.
Sorry, the mid-noughties. Yeah.
Apologise again.
Mr. Noughties. Call him by his name, Mr. Noughties.
But yeah, Liverpool, they started well.
They did start well.
They were 2-0 up.
The big contention here, though, was this VAR thing again.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's partly Chelsea's fault, but they didn't reset themselves.
No.
And the goal came along pretty quickly after that. And it was really, obviously, really poor defending for that Firmino goal, which is obviously an unmarked header. But on one hand, I suppose it is quite funny that like a team thinks they've equalised, they have it, and they concede another one. Yeah. But at the same time, you wonder the effect that VAR is having on this game,
massively.
And it doesn't need to.
I mean, in the North London derby, when Arsenal had the third goal disallowed, obviously Spurs didn't go on to score, but it sucks the energy out of everything. Mm. And it is that sort of, I think, completely unnecessary pageantry of having it up on the screen and all that that does that. It does affect you more than it used to do if you had a goal disallowed. And it is a very weird thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think we're agreed that we're not fans.
I would like to share a special mention for Tomori as well.
Yeah.
I thought he played very well. I thought he kept Salah pretty quiet around with the players around him. He had Emerson on the left, who had to go off injured. Alonso came in at left back, hasn't played an awful lot of football. Kovacic is kind of patchy, in my opinion. Mason Mount's a young, inexperienced attacking player. And that's the league's most potent front three, really. I mean, I know Man City won 8-0, but you know that's the front three that won the Champions League last season. And I thought Tomori, for a young, inexperienced player, did very, very well against Salah.
He looks a player, doesn't he?
He really looks very good.
Which is great because...
they need him.
Well, that sort of... I mean, did he come through the academy?
Yes, he did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen the likes of that probably since John Terry, really, haven't we, in terms of local players. I know Tomori can play for Nigeria and Canada as well as England, of course, and... I personally hope he chooses England, but we'll see how...
Imagine if he chose Canada.
Well, he could go. He'd be a legend, wouldn't he?
Well, maybe.
He'd be, you know, well, we'll see.
I might have had this wrong, but didn't Andreas Christensen come through as
I said that, I thought, you know, you might be right.
He came through, but he went away to Germany on loan, didn't he, for a while? I think they got him from Bromby, but very, very young. I think he came through the academy at Chelsea as well. So he needs a bit of credit as well.
But what do we think of Chelsea overall? I mean, they had the chances to get a point, of course. Lampard's lot, I thought they did okay. They ultimately lost, of course. But, you know, Lampard was applauding the fans, and a little bit was made about that the fans, the Chelsea fans, seem to be a bit patient there, perhaps because it's Lampard.
Well, because it's Lampard and also because of the transfer ban, I think, and the young players coming in as well. But this seems to be the narrative around Chelsea every time they don't win. They're like, oh, it's okay. There are a lot of positives to take. But you wonder when that's going to run out.
How long it'll last.
But also, I mean, Roman Abramovich, if reports are to be believed, wants entertaining football at Stamford Bridge. That's what he's wanted for years and years. Well, he's got it.
Yeah,
it might not be winning football, but it's entertaining football. Mm. They've scored 12. They've conceded 13.
Yeah.
He can't. It's early days in his career there, obviously, but he can't seem to set a team up to function properly without the ball. But going forward, they look interesting. And I think now, we're only six games in, but you look at a Chelsea game, you're going to go and watch a match, or you're going to watch it on TV, and if they're playing, you're starting to think it's going to be an interesting, entertaining game. And that's a great thing.
I mean, how long would you give it, though? I mean, because if Lampard, if they keep playing like this and they finish, say, seventh in the league or something like that, it's...
I think that'll be... I think they'll keep... They'll take that.
I think, barring disaster, Lampard will get another season.
Okay.
Because... you know, the transfer ban is such a huge thing. He's coming in such odd circumstances. And like I said, unless they finish like 14th or something, which I really don't think they will, then, you know.
Sure.
It's another reason why Leicester should be aiming for third.
Yes.
In another reason. He's one of their own.
Yes.
As old Frank Lampard.
But the Derby were quite poor defensively, from what I remember, under Lampard as well. So it's obviously a hallmark of the his type of management at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't managed to sort of get that quite right. But I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't improve. I mean, they've got good players.
Yeah.
And when Rudiger comes back, that'll improve them as well.
I like when Frank Lampard seems to spend his time going about Tammy Abraham. Obviously, he's had a great start of the season. Like, he's just sort of saying he's not fit enough for the rigors of the Premier League. I'm like, give him a chance. His shoulder almost popped out. That's when he fell awkwardly.
They had to deal with two players go off. Didn't they, for injury, quite early on as well.
A quick word on Liverpool before we move on.
Well, they're good.
They're very good, aren't they? I mean, the way they've started the season has been phenomenal, of course. But obviously they're going to be compared to Manchester City for obvious reasons. Now, Man City didn't have Kevin De Bruyne for a lot of last season.
Yeah.
De Bruyne has probably been the best player in the league so far. I mean, is it sort of swaying anybody's mind if they didn't pick Liverpool? Oh, I suppose we shouldn't say that because we've got the predictions, but... is it Liverpool's to lose, Jim, at the moment? Or is that ridiculous
after six games, it's just too early to say, isn't
it? Almost a fifth of the way through the season.
Mm. Yeah, all right. Fair.
They certainly look the best at it. And also, if you look at the games they've got coming up, they played Chelsea at the weekend. In the league coming up, they're Sheffield United away, Leicester at home, Man United... and then there's Spurs at home. If they get through those and win all those, I mean, that's a big statement.
It is.
Looking at last season, Klopp has probably gone like, look, we have to win every game. We've just got to win every game this season. And that way we can guarantee it, all right?
Well, so get on with it. Just win them all, for crying out loud. How hard can it be? It's very hard, according to Manchester United, of course. Jose Mourinho, Roy Keane and Graeme Souness.
I love that.
All in the same
studio. I know what they've done there.
With steak knives. Out.
After the game, Roy Keane said, "I was shocked and saddened by how bad Manchester United were." Jose Mourinho said, "I can't find any positives. We were bad last season, but I don't see any improvement this season." And I'm sure he took great relish in saying that.
Would you like to see each one of them in a special red button feature?
Oh, yeah.
Given a lump hammer and seeing who comes out of it best.
Roy Keane.
David Jones. David Jones straight away is dead.
Yeah, Jose Mourinho's not going to last long. Against Roy Keane,
David,
and Graeme,
David Jones has like a heart attack at the thought of it.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think Dave Jones, because he's sort of obviously quite smooth, he just casually just sort of sidesteps it and he's away.
He's gone, yeah.
Yeah.
They're all focusing on each other.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like when the Raptors focus on the T-Rex in Jurassic Park.
There's probably a panic room right next to the studio. Just in case.
Yeah, Jones will be behind the bulletproof glass.
Yeah, how much mace do you reckon he's got in his
And he'll be away.
Yeah. I do think that United were poor, and I tweeted about it saying that they seem like a common or garden Premier League team now.
Yeah.
They're okay if unspectacular at home. They're dreadful away from home. They haven't won away from home in the league for a very long time. And the biggest takeaway from watching that game at West Ham, who are a decent side, was just no big deal.
Absolutely.
They're a better team than Man United. They look like they were anyway. Man United didn't have any urgency, didn't have any snap in midfield, didn't have any kind of plan, really. And West Ham showed that once you're over this psychological thing with Man United, which dissipates more and more each season, it's not a big deal.
Was the free kick the first or the second goal? I forget.
Second.
But either way,
second.
Yeah, so the first one, Mark Noble, just had the ball at his feet in front of the 18-yard box. And he had so much space. And honestly, he looked confused. There was no press. Nobody seemed to give a toss that he had the ball. And then that led to the goal. I was like, wow.
Yeah. Noble was excellent, by the way.
More of this, he was saying.
But you had the space to be, didn't you? And that's the problem. And what a snapshot of modern Man United, that you've got Phil Jones apparently, you know, slagging the manager in the box while the ineffective Ed Woodward tells him off, and Man United struggle to break down West Ham in a beige kit.
Yeah. Well, I think, it's a wonderful picture. I think that was a funny video. Ed wasn't talking to Phil Jones.
Come on.
Of course he was.
Let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Who was he talking to then?
A woman next to Phil Jones.
Darmian, really? Saying the same thing.
It was a chorus, that's why. You could see him off.
Someone also pointed out that at one point the only fit striker United had was Solskjaer.
Well, maybe this is what it's all been building up to.
Is it time also for Makeda to come on?
Perhaps he was saying backed in the morning.
Backed in the
maybe.
Morning.
Maybe.
Yeah. Sucked?
Who knows?
It's a great way to start your day.
I've seen a few things online and whatnot, people suggesting that Manchester United are essentially, with regards to the management of the club, because there's a lot of anger towards how the club is being run, that there might be something in that Manchester United are thinking, okay, let's just... Obviously, they've signed big with Maguire and Wan-Bissaka and one or two others.
They've signed expensive.
So clearly, they're not doing, a Mike Ashley.
No.
But is there any suggestion that Manchester United think, okay, let's obviously improve the squad, and we'll give people the impression that we sort of are trying, but realistically they know they're not going to get near Liverpool with Klopp there. They're not going to get near Man City with Guardiola. So for the next sort of two or three seasons, however long that lasts,
the rebuilding
we'll
project.
we'll just keep sort of ticking over. We hope we nick fourth, because obviously Champions League football brings in a lot of money. But essentially, we just need to wait for a few seasons for them to go, then we'll go in. Now, that's what one or two people have suggested. I know that you're almost in dangerous territory.
The problem I think they've got is, I mean, it was pointed out by another pundit, I forget who, that I'm pointing out they're going to Solskjaer. They were in a position where it was a mistake they had to make. They've got to get it out of the way. Got to get it done, get out of the way. Someone also shared Rio Ferdinand's quotes on BT Sport around the time when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was temporary manager, saying, essentially summing up the feeling that everyone had, Ole's at the wheel, you've got to give him the job, he's done brilliantly, blah, blah, blah. Now, clearly he's not the man to be able to manage this team under the circumstances at the moment. They've got no direction off the pitch. Everyone knows about that. The players that they ended that game against West Ham with for Man United was it was farcical, really. Mm. Now, I know they've got players out missing through injury, but they don't have the most injuries in the Premier League by any means. So teams should have to deal with that, and most teams don't spend 900 million quid on a squad. Yeah. So that's point number one. Point number two is, Roy Keane was absolutely correct when he said, if you put another load of jerseys on that team, you wouldn't know they're Man United players. Yeah, yeah. The demands they put on themselves aren't big enough, they're not good enough, and the players just simply aren't up to it. And in some ways, you can't really blame the players for not being good enough, but you can blame them for not applying themselves properly. The final point is, go and get Allegri. Go and get Max Allegri. Mm. Go. He's out of a job. He's managed a top club. Yeah. He's shown he knows what it takes to take care of the demands of a truly big club. And if you want to write this season off, fair enough. If there's some truth to that kind of thing, which veers very close to conspiracy theory, in my view. No, I know you're only reporting what people are saying. Get it out of the way. Get Allegri in. Get him settled. Give him a full pre-season next summer and get him to go again, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, as nice as a man he is, and he's doing his best and he loves the club and people love him, and I get that. I've got no problem with that. But he's not big enough to manage a team of that size. And that is, unfortunately, the sad reality. And he's certainly not big enough to manage it when he's not got a decent sporting director behind
him. But is that sad reality also perhaps part of the reason that the job just maybe isn't as appealing as it once was to someone like Allegri?
I think it's more appealing.
You think it's more appealing because it's a rebuilding project?
Because of it, yeah. Because I mean, you're going to be a legend there, couldn't you?
Yeah, I suppose you're absolutely right about the board level being the problem, mate. It's like, how much dead wood would... Sorry, how much dead wood could actually do his job? Yeah. Yeah. Like that is not a Man United squad, is it? It really, really doesn't feel like it.
They've got players, the players who potentially could be available for them if they weren't injured or otherwise unavailable, that could have played at the weekend. Sure. I mean, Bailly probably would maybe feature, but I mean, it feels like he wants to play Maguire and Lindelof anyway.
Yeah.
Martial, Pogba, and Rashford. I mean, he started the game and went off injured.
Yeah, they've still got Pogba to come back.
What happened with Pogba? What's going on?
No idea.
His list is doubtful. Well, weirdly doubtful.
They need a midfielder.
His mindset.
They need a midfielder like Mark Noble to run that midfield, I'm telling
you. Well, good on West Ham, by the way, because the biggest credit you can give them is to say...
Aaron Cresswell has got a hell of a kick on him.
He had a sighter, and he had another one.
He did, that was
all
nice.
I need. Thank you very much. But the biggest compliment you can pay West Ham is they brushed Man United aside like it was no big deal.
Mm.
And that is a sad indictment of what United have become.
They're in a great spot at the moment, West Ham. They're going under the radar a little bit.
Well, when you see Pellegrini go about his business, now I know he probably wouldn't go to Manchester United, but a manager like that might not go amiss there.
It is mad that West Ham objectively have a better manager than Man United do.
Well, they do have a better manager, isn't it? Don't doubt that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you mean. So did Newcastle not that long ago.
Roadies.
Exactly, yeah. Very quickly, Jim, because you've been very patient. What a comeback from Arsenal against Aston Villa.
What a strange game in which Arsenal managed to beat not Aston Villa, but themselves, I think.
Yeah.
Such a topsy-turvy game. You've got to feel for Villa fans as well.
Smith couldn't believe that they didn't win the match.
I know.
He's absolutely
neither
right.
Neither can anyone in the stadium. It was a strange one, and just the worst of Arsenal, but also some of the best of Arsenal as well. The characters come back, and I don't know what it is, but around, I think, about 55 minutes, Matteo Guendouzi at home becomes the best player on earth. Like, he takes games by the scruff of the neck, and like, he did it a little bit last season, but we're seeing him really, really do it to an effective degree at home this season. That away form is still going to be a problem, but... yeah, again, so impressed with him. So impressed with Aubameyang. He keeps digging us out, keeps digging Emery out as well.
But do you think Guendouzi, he feels bad for the first half performance and he gets revved up by that thing?
He just hates losing.
Right.
And that's a great trait to have. I think Arsenal are under the radar, to use your term, Jim, in terms of the weirdest team in the Premier League. You look at the raw stats. I didn't see this game. It wasn't on TV, obviously. I haven't seen it. But you look at the raw stats of the game. Mm. Arsenal at home to a promoted team. 7 yellow cards. They bring on Callum Chambers for an otherwise attacking player.
Yeah.
Who scores a
lovely finish.
One of their players gets sent off when they're 2. Is it when they're 2-1 one down?
One. No, 1-0 down.
When they're 1-0 down. They come back to win 3-2. I mean, Guendouzi tears all over in some sort of mad scorched earth policy.
Yeah.
And just takes everyone with him. It's a mad thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ainsley Maitland-Niles gets sent off at 1-0. Callum Chambers comes on to replace him in the second half, and that somehow costs Villa the game. I was going to save this for later, actually, but I think I'll just dive in with it two-footed now. A friend of mine is an Aston Villa fan. He was at the game, and Aston Villa fans are an underrated, put upon group of fans. They have such a sort of like almost gallows humour about their team. And my friend Paddy was in the away end, and he left the game when Arsenal were awarded the free kick. Not when it went in. When they were awarded the free kick, he was like, "I know where this is going." Left as he's leaving the stadium. Here's the roar, like, "Yep, yeah, cheers." I love that he was proven right by that. Poor Villa. I hope they stay up.
Poor bugger.
My thing to bring to the table of weird stuff, chimes into, I know something you want to talk about, Marcus, is the policeman in the Edinburgh Derby.
Oh, well,
have you seen it?
Have you mentioned the Edinburgh Derby? Then I'm in all ears.
Yeah. When Hart scored, he was pictured behind the goal, giving it a big pump in the face.
Like that,
yeah. And then he suddenly remembers where he is and stops.
Is that right?
It's brilliant, yeah. Derbies are great for that. And I'm saying that now because tomorrow, Pompey, you're going to get pumped by Southampton.
They are,
Pompey.
Yeah.
I won't be able to enjoy it.
Did you see Southampton over the weekend?
Did you see Portsmouth over the weekend?
Hey. The South Coast Derby was all right for Bournemouth, wasn't it? First win at St Mary's.
Could be a Norwich, could be a Watford Man City result. You could hammer them.
Imagine. You wouldn't want
imagine
to.
That.
Wounded animals, as
imagine
I said.
That.
Or you could go 1-0 down and then come back and win 2-1 like the Hearts did against the Hibs.
Or we could go 1-0 down, have a chance to equalise and then lose 8-0.
Yeah. Or you could go 1-0 down, have a man sent off, then equalise, then immediately concede again and then score 2.
Anything like
normal teams.
Anything's possible.
But the important thing is Hearts are off the bottom.
Yeah.
All right. You know what he said the other week, Craig Levine? And we're going to finish with this.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Is when they were bottom of the league. Terrible start of the season. He went, "Oh, we're only 6 points off fourth, though."
It's a fair point.
It's a fair point, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to The Ramble on Football Ramble.
That was
daily.
Premier League heavy, but a lot happened.
Sorry, Football League fans, but I am one of them, so leave off. Thursday night, Hackney Empire. Luke, say goodbye quick. Pete,
goodbye.
Say goodbye. Jim, say goodbye. Goodbye, everybody. RambleLive.com.
This was a Stakhanov production.
I've just realised if we run out of time, we can just carry on talking after that.
Let's talk about Southampton Bournemouth. Dan Sott, left back. No, thank you.
Come to Hackney Empire, I have to say, and come to Alexandra Palace, because Marcus put the running order in my inbox yesterday. And it made me laugh so much.
Thanks very much.
And I'm going to be in it. So imagine what it's going to be like for people who've paid to be there. Not as funny, probably, because they've paid.
You'd
but still
much.
Come. RambleLive.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, "Yeah, I've had a good life, right?"
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, "Listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind."
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, "I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit," and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.